Hi, my name is Phil Manzanera, and you're listening to me on Life Minute TV.
Best known for his timeless riffs as lead guitarist of Roxy Music, Phil Manzanera is one of the UK's most notable musicians and record producers, having shot to prominence in the early 70s with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band. Now in his fifth decade as a musician, Manzanera is sharing his fascinating life in his new captivating memoir, Revolution to Roxy. The autobiography details his early childhood growing up in the dangerous streets of Havana, to his musical journey with Roxy and later performing with Bob Dylan and being sampled by Jay-Z and Kanye on their Grammy-winning song. A companion music CD of the same name is also out now, featuring 10 tracks in total, including 5 previously unreleased songs. He was in New York recently for a special show and came by the Life Minute Studios to tell us all about it and play some of his indelible music. This is the Life Minute with Phil Manzanera.
On the special edition of this book, because I'm self-published, I did a special edition. I thought I shall put a special CD that has unreleased tracks and some new tracks. I also stuck on some of the live stuff that I did at that guitar festival of my solo stuff in 1991, as well as some work with my fellow Roxy members, Andy Mackay and Paul Thompson. The first track, which is named after my mum, Magdalena. So that's got a selection of stuff on it. You can actually buy that as a separate CD. As I put in the preface of the book, I'm not sure if there's a need for another memoir from a rock musician. But really, one of the reasons I did it was so that my vast family know where they came from. And people often say, oh, I wish I'd asked my parents about our background, you know, our history or their parents, etc. And then it becomes too late. And so in Colombia, I have 60 cousins. And I think the Spanish version came out 6 months before. And I did that so they could really find out where they came from. Apart from being a memoir and not an autobiography, it was for me also to try and make sense of what happened and what Roxy Music was. There's a duality there. It's about my family, where I discovered a whole load of crazy things that I didn't know about. With Roxy, trying to make sense after 50, it was the 50-year anniversary a couple of years ago. I discovered that one of my relations was the most famous Jewish pirate of the Caribbean, who has his own Wikipedia page. And actually, when we looked at the painting of him, he looked remarkably like I did in 1972 in Roxy, with the beard, high boots, and swashbuckling kind of person. I'm sure I just saw something into it. It's probably not there. But yeah, the whole series of things that we started looking into about my father, about whether he was a spy, MI6 spy, you know, and then you're into sort of James Bond territory. And it's sort of fascinating. And then I discovered when I was 40, from one of my dying aunts, that my British father, he was illegitimate, and that his real father was a touring itinerant classical musician from Naples. Now, you might think I'm making all this up. And so I sometimes read through the book thinking, people are not going to believe this. They think I'm just making the whole thing up. And then I sort of went looking for proof. And we found a lot of proof, and we still are discovering proof. On all sorts of levels, and there's still work to be done. When I was 6 years old, my father was transferred to Havana, Cuba, so that's 1957, to supposedly open up the office because he worked for an airline. It's now called British Airways. I get sent to a Cuban school. I learn to speak Spanish within 3 meses, y ahora puedo hablar español. And my mum starts having guitar lessons. She teaches me some chords for boleros and classic evergreen Spanish songs. But in the background, Fidel Castro is in the Sierra Maestra, brewing up at the revolution. Eventually, the revolution arrives in Havana, and we live opposite the chief of staff of the dictator, Batista, and his general, Tabernilla, his name was. If you've ever seen Godfather Part 2, there's a great scene where all the mafia heads come and meet in Havana. And it's in 1958, exactly when we were there, going into 1959. And there's a great scene in Godfather Part 2 where there is a New Year's Eve ball happens, and the president and all the ladies in their jewelry and everything are dancing away. And meanwhile, the tanks are coming into a place called Santa Clara, which is halfway to Cuba. And there's Che Guevara and Camilo Cienfuegos, and they're on their way to Havana. So some guy comes in the film and says, "The tanks are coming. Let's get the hell out of here." Hilariously, they all go whizzing out of the presidential palace, jump in their big cars and head for the airport to catch a plane out of there so they can get away. If you took a drone up and moved it to the right and you looked down, you'd see our garden. I had a gun battle with machine guns and people attacking his house, and us on the bathroom floor with my mother screaming, very sweet Colombian lady, but you know, not averse to giving it a bit of welly if bullets are flying around everywhere. And so the gun battle going on while all these people in their cars are going to the airport, which was military airport, which was near our house. I watched it again recently, and it brought back loads of memories of that night, which was pretty scary. Eventually, it was too dangerous to stay there, and we get sent out of Havana. But that's when my first part of my music DNA, I guess, came from. We went to Hawaii, and I heard Hawaiian music, and we were there when it became a US state. And then we went to Venezuela. And then an English boy who was at a boarding school in England came over, who showed me some Chuck Berry riffs. And I was like, what's this? And it was quite difficult to play. They used to call it R&B then, but that has a totally different meaning, R&B now. I thought, wow, this is good. And I was at school to start with in Venezuela, British school. And me and my Venezuelan friend, college kids, would come over and play at parties. And they would play Buddy Holly, Beach Boys, and we could see the girls from our class looking at them. So we looked at each other and said, we've got to go electric. So we got to get electric guitars and we've got to learn. And then I started listening to the World Service, the BBC World Service. I used to hear music starting to come out of England with a band called The Shadows and Cliff Richard and all that. And I saw Elvis films in Venezuela. Ironically, Blue Hawaii came out at that time, and I'd just been in Hawaii, so extra drawn to Elvis, but like many musicians, you know, that was so exciting. I begged my parents to send me to London to a boarding school, age 9. I turned up in September 1960, and I was there for the whole of the 60s. The Beatles happened, the Stones happened, the Kinks happened, Cream happened, the Who happened, Jimi Hendrix turned up in England. And then we heard about all these bands from the West Coast, The Doors, Jefferson Airplane, Grateful Dead, Velvet Underground in New York. And we were just obsessed, and Miles Davis, and you just name it. It was just a whole musical revolution. And it's a story that, you know, lots of British musicians tell. They found a particular band that just did it for them and inspired them to keep wanting to be in a band. The other day I was doing an article about this event I did in 1991 of guitar legends. One night I ended up playing with Les Paul, but if you're a guitarist and you're playing at Les Paul, and then you play with Les Paul and with Roger McGuinn, with Richard Thompson, all sorts of fantastic musicians that I didn't realize were there. And then another night, obviously with Bob Dylan. First of all, if I'm going to talk about Bob Dylan, can I just say I think he's incredible. I love Bob Dylan. Everything about him. I was the musical director, and I had an evening for Expo, and I had a budget of like $7 million. I could ring up the best guitarists in the world, the best musicians, and it's going to be 5 nights broadcast live in America and in the UK. And so I had a concept for every night, So I thought, oh yeah, right, we'll have one night that's jazz, one night that's blues, one night that's folk, one night that's heavy rock. All the people who were left ended up on my night. So that was Bob Dylan, Keith Richards, Jack Bruce. Then I was tasked to actually rehearse Bob Dylan, which I obviously was terrified by this. The day came and we're rehearsing there in Seville under the stage. It's like 90 degrees outside. And the door opens and in comes Jeff, his manager, with Bob, who's wearing a parka, green parka with sort of, you know, furry bits, right? And I say, right, this is great. I've got the best musicians in the world here. See, best drummer with Miami horns, greatest thing. Jack Bruce, bass. And what would you like to do? I went out, bought all his records. I didn't need to because I knew most of them. And he said, oh, do you know the Tex-Mex song from 1947? I said, oh, gee, what? I'm stumped. So anybody else know? No. Right. Oh, I said, well, look, you play it and we'll learn it. And so he proceeded to play it. They play it differently every time. Play about six times, play it differently. And I'm looking, my bubbles go in my head saying, what are you going to do? We've paid him a lot of money. He's got it's live TV. And then people started making excuses to leave the room. And then virtually everybody left the room. So it's just me and Bob left. And he said, you know what? Let's just play acoustic guitars. I said, oh, I'm thinking inside, no, they're going to kill me, the sponsor. I said, also, Bob, I'm sort of thinking, how can I show you this? You have to play All Along the Watchtower, but not your version, the Jimi Hendrix version, because it's called Guitar Legends, you know. Let me say, All Along the Watchtower only has three chords in it. So we start playing, and he doesn't come up and sing. So eventually, it all stops, and I sort of scratch my head and think, help, you know, what am I going to do? So I thought, oh, I know he loves this guitarist called Richard Thompson. I found out where he was. He was playing a gig in Amsterdam. I said, Richard, would you like to play with Bob Dylan? Everybody in the world would love to play with Bob. Richard turned up, and it was day of the live broadcast, and no one's got any idea what we're going to play, except we know we're meant to play All Along the Watchtower. And whether he turns up and sings it, what's going to happen? It's live. So I say to Richard, go into his dressing room, find out what he wants to play. Richard goes in and says, what do you fancy playing tonight? And he said, do you know this Tex-Mex song from 1947? Ah! And he proceeded to play it differently every time, you know. So Richard comes out sort of scratching his head. If you watch the video on YouTube, you can see everybody like looking at each other going, see, gee, you know, and I've got no idea what he sang. I've got absolutely no idea. I still can't work it out. I've looked at it hundreds of times. I thought it was just me personally, but then I've read subsequent things that happened when the band played the last waltz gig that's filmed by Scorsese. It happened to George Harrison here, Madison Square Garden. He's inscrutable, but he's a genius. In the UK, you don't really appreciate how important the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is here in America. We weren't ever looking to be inducted or anything, but then out of the blue, this thing came through. You're up for selection, and then suddenly you're in. So we hadn't played together for about 5 years, so we said, you know what, we better try and acquit ourselves well. So we came here and rehearsed for a week, even though there were only three or four tracks, because we knew there'd be a lot of musicians there. We didn't want to look like a bunch of amateurs. We'd regressed to being inspired amateurs. And I remember getting into the Barclay Center here and looking up around me, it's enormous, and thinking, wow, this is a big deal. Oh, look on that table, there's a whole Fleetwood Mac, and there's Janet Jackson, and this. It was great. It was a great evening. Yeah, we really, really enjoyed it, and very kindly, Simon Le Bon and John Taylor from Duran Duran inducted us, said some nice things.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is our pleasure to induct into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Roxy Music!
It was great, yeah, so we're very pleased. We thought, it's coming up for the 50th, and I was around at Brian's house he lives near me in the country, he may have suggested, you know, do you fancy playing? And I was quite surprised because he normally doesn't. I said, yeah, it's a good way to celebrate it. And then after we did that, we said, well, why don't we do a 50th anniversary goodbye tour, which we did. And we did 11 dates in America, one in Canada and three in the UK. And we finished at the O2 in London, which was great, actually. But at the end of that, me and Andy thought, you know what? I think it's time to stop. It went well, and we got away with it. So let's quit while we're ahead. And people seem to like it, even though we have business to do, bits and pieces to bring out. And when we played here in Madison Square Gardens, it's the last ever Roxy. So if you missed it, you missed it. Next, we have an album out with Andy Mackay from Roxy Music and Paul Thompson, the drummer, which is difficult to define what kind of music is it. It's sort of improvised, but it's not jazz. It's more like sonic stuff, and it relies on an immersive visual context. In some ways, it's a bit like going back to the second half of the 60s, psychedelia with lights. But I noticed that there was a thing at South by Southwest just recently where the Polyphonic Spree did a thing in a sort of huge planetarium type environment. So that this idea of immersive music, that's what we're into. And that's coming out in June. AMPM it's called. Bizarrely, I ended up being a producer of about, I don't know how many tracks, 9, 10, 11, of Rod Stewart and Jules Holland doing jazz numbers from the 30s, rearrangements with a big band, which was something that I never expected me to do. It's the Forrest Gump thing. How did I end up doing that? But I wanted to meet Rod, and he was great. It was number one in England. Having my riff, a guitar riff of mine from a solo album, sampled by Jay-Z and Kanye West, and it being number one and winning a Grammy, and the only Grammy I've ever won or been a part of, that was pretty big. And it's been used in films, and even the trailer for the latest Gladiator 2 film, which was incredible. And that just came out of the blue, and no intention. So thank you, 88 Keys, who sampled it and then gave it to them. I'll tell you, one of the great ironies is that I did a solo album in 1976 called K-Scope, and I was recording at a friend's house. He was the bass player in Yes, Chris Squire, and I knew I had the musician's book the next day, and I thought, I haven't got anything to record. So I was watching the TV with my guitar, and I was just going ding, 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 ding. I thought, oh, that'll do. I went to the next day, recorded that. And irony of ironies, like 40 years later, it becomes this huge hit. And I thought, that's real rock and roll. Anything can happen. You just got to keep going. And sooner or later, the karma will come back. Music, it can do magical things. Doing the book, it's made me realize that one constant in my life has been music. You know, ever since my mother showed me how to play a few chords and to be able to sing some songs along with those chords, it's been with me the whole of my time through ups. And it's a bit a sort of useful meditative tool. And we know that music is good for people's mental health. And it brings back memories and has resonance for so many people on so many different occasions. Very pleased to be part of music. So I have no regrets from that point of view. And I'm always learning. It brings people together.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.